Coming at you live from the orbital moon base, it's Starman and the Zoomer.
Please send air. There isn't much left. Yes.
I'm afraid we're paying double rates for air these days. It's all it's inflation.
Ba-dum-tsh. Yeah, but the Germans come up here and took all the air first.
Dear me. Anyway, as people filter in, we will say indeed that we are back.
Yes, the weather on the moon is relatively dry and quite clear today.
Yes, it's not too bad up here.
The only shame is that everything on the desk is slightly floating a little bit, and it's a bit of a pain. But
I sure hope my legs don't break.
Yeah,
I'm not going to continue with that joke. This is a terrible one. But you guys requested it. We've given it to you. It's more containment.
Yes,
and we won't have to highlight the containment at this point. This was a gimme. We've kind of, to be fair, kept this one a little bit in our back pocket.
Yeah,
because honestly, I don't think it's as intriguing as some of the stuff that's a bit more closely related to the direct funding model of the Tory party, like our little trilogy was. But this is just full of the wackiest stuff you will see for quite a while. We're about to take you on quite the journey.
Well, see, we should almost use the line, and I see someone kind of half doing it in the chat. It's like some sort of chat interaction. Like, yes. Chat! Can you be contained? And then I need the wall of, no, we can't be contained. But anyway, for those who saw us on Academic Agents stream last night for the cigar stream, I hope you enjoyed. If there's any new people that have come across from that or the Dellingpole stuff, this is your first stream. I would say you're welcome, but maybe not so much.
Yes.
You're welcome to give us money and shill our stuff. You can find us on Substack, where we do all our writing, and you can subscribe there. You can become a member on the YouTube channel, or you can give a one-time donation via the Ko-fi link that is pinned in the chat.
Yes, that's the best way to do it. Like I said, we are still fully monetized somehow, so interacting with the videos and donating and all that stuff and leaving comments does help us. We'd like to get that out of the way. We don't try to do too much YouTube-y stuff, but you have to play the game a little bit.
I mean, it's one thing we've not mentioned in a while. We might as well mention it to some of the new people, that please do get down in the comments and just discuss how much you love Al Gore's rhythm.
Yes, the rhythms of Al Gore.
Yes. There is none out there really like Al Gore's.
No. And you mentioned it earlier, but we do also do written work. There will be another piece out this week, likely from the Substack. We'll see if I manage to finish it or not. But there's a decent amount of stuff to read there. There's some stuff for paid users and blah, 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 blah. We just like the frog.
Yes, we like the frogs.
So it just reminded me of something. But we have a few areas for content, but that's not really what this is about. What it's about is we're not going to sit here and talk about, like, ooh, the Tories behave like communists. No, that's not what this is about. For once, we are talking about literal communists.
Yes.
Basically, everyone we will mention in this video is a communist in the literal sense.
Or is at least was or is still in some way a member of a group called the Revolutionary Communist Party.
It's changed its name, but they're still a member of it.
Yes.
as we'll get to.
Well, as is mentioned in one of the articles we'll get to, I'm not sure if it's one of the first ones you've got there or not. I think it might actually be in there as a comment from one Munira Mirza.
I'll get this on screen, but to preface it very, very quickly with what we're doing, there has been some incongruities that we've noticed in who is advising the government in Britain, and some of these things have breached the news cycle already. We are having a delve into some of stuff that you may have picked up on in tiny little bits if you're quite a close follower of UK politics. But one of the big incongruities that people noticed is that, yes, literal communists have been advising the Boris... were advising the Boris Johnson government back in 2020. So go on.
Yes, well, no, it's just... I was going to point to the fact that I believe at some point anywhere in this article there is a comment by this one Munira Mirza character. It says, well, it's not really about communism anymore. It's about the ideas. So, I mean, I think we could... we could, and we probably will in future, develop this idea a little more, but just think about the people that we're discussing here and the groups they are associated with. It's essentially functioning like their own little vanguard for their own interests.
Yes, For those of you familiar with UK politics, and we'll probably mention this at the end because I've got a couple of postscript things we have time for it. Both the early neocons and the early Labour Party were both Trotskyites of exactly this ilk.
Yes.
And they created small organised minorities that took over, well, started the Labour Party in the UK and really started the neoconservative movement in America. Because those of you who don't know, the neoconservative movement is a Trotskyite movement.
Yes. there may be some slightly strange framing throughout some of the stuff that we're going to read in this as well. Yes. Because there's some Guardian articles and some other bits and bobs that aren't just like centre-right garbage, but centre-left garbage.
A lot of this stuff has been criticised from the left. Most of what you will hear in the sources that we're using are leftists criticising other leftists for being basically anti-woke leftists.
Yes.
This is what the anti-woke left looks like, as we'll get to. But
Should we just fire into this article for a bit here and we'll get some context going? How a fringe sect from the 1980s influenced Number 10's attitude to racism. Munira Mirza is in charge of the UK's Inequality Commission, but her past comments do not inspire confidence.
Again.
With pressure mounting from the global Black Lives Matter protest movement. Where are these people now? They're already gone. Boris Johnson has put forward his advisor Munira Mirza to lead a new commission on racial inequality. However, her appointment undermines the commission before it has even started. Mirza has previously expressed scepticism about the existence of institutional racism in the justice system and has suggested that anti-racist lobbyists and activists have corroded public trust. She's also suggested that Britain does not have a serious problem with racism. This comes as no surprise. Mirza has been associated with Spiked, an online magazine increasingly well known for its varying takes on current events and for its writers popping up in various places across the media landscape with right-wing views.
Isn't that odd?
Infamous for its right-libertarian and iconoclastic style, Spiked has gained notoriety for arguing against numerous progressive positions, but using a rhetorical style indebted to its earlier incarnation as a Trotskyist group in the 1980s and 1990s. The Revolutionary Communist Party. With combative tone, the magazine's writers have routinely sought to dismiss many political actions as not dealing with the real issues. I do remember distinctly from doing some of the notes stuff earlier on that there is not much else really going in here other than the fact that they just kind of dropped the fact, some of the Revolutionary Communist Party people weren't 100% in with AIDS awareness, which I think is in the paragraph below.
Yes, but this is kind of an introduction. It's kind of a soft introduction, because what we'll be reading from throughout some of this is a paper called Culture Wars, or at least an essay called Culture Wars. Culture War Marxism, the Revolutionary Communist Party Diaspora and the Conservative Party. And this is really some of the meat of what we'll be doing here. The influence of the alumni of the Revolutionary Communist Party, especially that in Boris Johnson's former advisor, Munira Mirza. I can't say these foreign names.
Let's just call her fucking Mary or something.
Let's just call her upon the Conservative leadership has been much remarked upon in recent years. Rather than an unlikely alliance brought together by the Brexit campaign, however, this relationship has deeper roots within the Conservative intellectual ecosystem. If the Conservatives have often lacked ideas beyond the will to power, the Revolutionary Communist Party has never lacked for ideas.
Yes, ideas, in quotes.
Nevertheless, the post-Brexit political landscape has created a greater degree of alignment between the two.
God. Susan Michke, is that like some sort of, is that a Seinfeld joke?
I'm not even sure.
I think that might be. I can do this bit.
Yeah, go for it.
In early February 2022, Munira Mirza, the head of Downing Street's policy unit, it's an interesting role to have as a revolutionary communist,
yes.
And a long-time aide to Boris Johnson, resigned over the Prime Minister's use of a far-right smear at PMQs. In heated exchanges amid the Partygate scandal, Johnson had levelled the accusation that Labour leader Keir Starmer had failed to prosecute the paedophile Jimmy Savile during his time as Director of Public Prosecutions. Mercer decried this as inappropriate and wrote that the PM had let himself down by making a scurrilous accusation. Unsurprisingly, the departure of such a senior aide attracted media attention. Justin Parkinson penned a short profile on Mirza for the BBC. Born in 1978, to parents who'd come to the UK from Pakistan, Miss Mirza went to a comprehensive school before studying English at Oxford University. While there, she joined the Revolutionary Communist Party, as you do when you're at Oxford.
Yeah.
But during her 20s, frustrated at what she thought to be a lack of free thought on the far left, she went through an ideological transformation. Having completed a PhD in sociology at the University of Kent, she started to work for Policy Exchange.
Oh.
I mean, I will just say as well.
Policy Exchange.
The fact that we get in that first paragraph there about a spiked writer being disgusted about an accusation of paedophilia will be an almost recurring theme in some ways.
Yes, it is.
But then it's I think as well, and this is something I believe Radlib sort of asked you about in the Telegram chat when you were announcing the stream, is this is like the classic sort of path that many boomer and silent generation Republicans in America took.
Yes.
They became sort of weird Marxists or Trotskyists of some variety in the late 30s, 40s, sometimes right through into the 50s and further on. Begun to realise that communism wasn't really going far in America on its own.
Yes.
And obviously, if you're aware of the CIA's involvement in creating the quote-unquote non-communist left, that had a large part to do with that. So they decided, well, you know, much like Mrs. Mirza here, there's no free thought on the far left. We can't get anywhere. So we'll just pretend we're conservatives because that's where the real power lies.
The basic details of this are broadly accurate. Mirza did attend those institutions and she did hold those jobs and she was a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party. Parkinson's profile, however, is an exercise in being right on the details while completely and utterly missing the bigger picture. Being in the RCP was not, for Mirza, a brief flirtation with student leftism, a fun detail to add colour to the profile of Conservative Party apparatchik. It has rather been a key through line, an organising ideology of Mirza's politics and hints at the wider strategy of how an ostensibly communist grouping that supposedly disbanded in 1997 came to hold not insignificant sway in the contemporary Conservative Party.
It's an interesting year for it to disband, isn't it?
Yeah. Understanding the group's history and how it has come to stalk the corridors of power gives us a valuable insight into the internal world of the party that has run the country for a dozen years and counting. We'll get into the actual history of the Revolutionary Communist Party in a sec.
I was going to say the first paragraph for this is actually quite good in that, if you don't want to go to any other links in the meantime. The Revolutionary Communist Party began life as a split from the International Socialist Group, now the Socialist Workers' Party. It went through several iterations across the 1970s before, at the end of the decade, emerging as the RCP. Then, as now, its intellectual leading light and de facto leader was Frank Ferredi. Ferredi was born in Hungary in 1947. His family fled to Canada in 1956 as a result of the revolution. He came to the UK in the late 1960s and quickly became active in Trotskyist politics. He received a PhD in sociology from the University of Kent in the 1980s and has been at Kent ever since, where he's now Professor of Sociology. His tenure there has made the institution something of a centre for the RCP. Mirza, naturally, was Ferredi's PhD student there in the 2000s. She published a book based on her PhD thesis in 2012 about government approaches to cultural policy.
That's probably quite a good summary then, because we have a bit more... Excuse me. We have a bit more of the revolutionary communist tendrils here. Because the other thing that we noticed was... Why has a revolutionary communist become a conservative peer?
Yes, and this is someone we've actually mentioned before in regards to some of the elements of containment. One Baroness Claire Fox.
Yes. There's an article here from The Critic. I think it engages in some stuff that isn't useful later down, but we'll read it until it gets a bit off-piste. Who told Boris Johnson to make Claire Fox a peer and why? Jonathan Ball was 3 years old. Tim Parry was 12. They're talking about her support for an IRA bombing here is the phrase.
Yes.
They're not really talking about... This is a bit of an outrage piece that misses the point, as some stuff from The Critic tends to do, I'm afraid. But anyway, I will read the introduction here. One of the new additions to the House of Lords, whose name has surprised many on the left and on the right, is Claire Fox. Why has Boris Johnson put her name forward? Surely he should have known about her political history in the Revolutionary Communist Party. Or, as he obviously doesn't mind that his advisor, Mirza, who we talked about earlier, is ex-RCP, maybe making one of them part of the legislature didn't seem like a big enough deal. Let me be clear on one point, though. I don't think it would be surprising if any Tory PM put an ex-RCP member into the House of Lords if it was evident that they had not renounced their previous views. After all, to take one example, Sir Alfred Sherman was an advisor to Margaret Thatcher despite having been a member of the Communist Party in his youth. But when someone, in this case Claire Fox, who is utterly unapologetic about their past controversial beliefs and indeed confirms that they still hold them, is emboldened by a Prime Minister who shares neither her past fondness for the IRA struggle nor her current lockdown scepticism. Well then, something very curious has happened. Almost certainly is going to go on happening until it explodes.
I would scroll down a little bit here. There's this sort of paragraph that's taken out that I believe is an interview with Claire Fox.
Well, I just said, let's go back to the last year's EU elections when the Brexit Party announced that Claire Fox was to be their candidate for North West England. Because she was part of the Brexit Party's election campaign in Northern England. Which is, a strange confluence here. But go on.
Well, it's just, I find this little paragraph here that is a quote from her to be quite eye-opening, because I think this speaks to the view of all of these people at some level. I never left the RCP when it was disbanded in 1997. The organisation folded in the mid-90s. Few of us actually recanted our ideas. Instead, we resolved to support one another more informally as we pursued our political tradition as individuals, or launched new projects with more general aims that have also engaged people from different traditions, or none. These include Spiked and the Institute of Ideas, where I now work.
That is, by the way, the Institute of Ideas is the people who run the Battle of Ideas. The Battle of Ideas, the Free Speech Absolutist Conference, is run by an unapologetic communist.
And someone
part of a political cabal who is openly talking about that they are part of an informal political cabal whose stated mission is to soak itself into UK politics. Welcome to the libertarian right in the UK.
Something I saw in chat there that mildly interested me. I might have a further look at that at some point. But yes, you know, how often does someone who is a communist be involved amongst the right wing that they shouldn't be involved in, and also be interviewed by someone else and basically give free comment to the fact that, oh yes, well, I'm here engaging in subversion, of course. Why else would I be here? Power.
Ah, dear. Well, I don't think we want to keep going with this one, because this one goes into a lot of hand-wringing about...
Give me a second, let me check the...
It goes into a bit of a hand-wringing about an IRA bombing, which is kind of reported here. Brexit Party candidate criticised for past IRA defence. Basically, she defended the bombing in Warrington that was, you know, a bombing on British soil that killed a bunch of civilians, as Trotskyites tend to do.
Yeah, they do have a habit of that one.
I don't think there's too much more here on this one, though, is there?
Yes.
Here's another one. Here's from the Byline Times. Fox in Ermine, from revolutionary communist to Lady Buckley. Otto English charts the rise of a brand new member of the unaccounted, unelectable House of Lords. Again, all of this has a very highly leftist bent on it. Apart from that Critic one, which seems to just be trying to go in for the whole IRA angle, there's basically no discussion of this on the right. I know somebody talked about Unity News Network and things like that. There's been a few pieces of chatter about it. But you'll mainly see, as we go forward, there's individual instances in which the press becomes outraged. But nobody's reporting on the fact that effectively a small cabal of communists, as it said in the other piece, is stalking the halls of power. That seems to be a non-issue to people on the right. And I the problem is that as a lot of these people who related to it, as we'll go forward and as we'll see, keep appearing in our spaces.
Yes.
This hasn't been excised from our circles. In fact, it continues largely unabated. But not. Hopefully that's not too many spoilers there.
I was going to say, scroll down to the part where it's the second section on this revolutionary communism. And yes. The fourth paragraph. Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, thanks.
One of its early members was Claire Fox, who joined as a student at Warwick University and stayed with it to the bitter end. Fox was more than a rank-and-file member, she was a key player in the movement, eventually co-publishing the group's glossy monthly magazine Living Marxism, right up until it lost a libel action against ITN News and folded. She rang, but having done so, simply refused to decipher her stance down the line to him, compounding the arrogance of it all. In the course of the 2 decades of her membership, the RCP/Living Marxism stoutly defended the IRA and any number of despots. Now, we don't really care about disavowing terrorists or dictators or whatever, but again, it's pointed out here that not only is she just some sort of, like, you know, fellow traveller, I did a little bit of communism in university. No, this is someone who's dedicated to it. For decades.
Those of you saying, oh, I like Claire Fox, all these people are fine. I'm afraid in the second half of this, you might regret saying that.
Yeah.
you're all making, I'm afraid, slight idiots of yourselves. But we'll get there. We'll get to the really evil stuff in the second half. We're building up to it, but there's some really evil stuff we're going to have to talk about. Anyway, keep going.
I'm not sure. I think the rest is, again... is constantly battering on about the IRA thing. There's a sort of section here, Chumocracy, again, which is more about the IRA.
This is once, I was going to say, this is once again a kind of a weird point about the fact that this person's come out of nowhere and is known for defending the IRA. And that seems to be the only vector that this has been talked about. I'll move on to this one. The Ballad of Poor Claire Fox, Boris Johnson and the Revolutionary Communist Party and the House of Lords. I never figured Claire Fox for a lady, but Boris Johnson took the opposite view and has elevated her to the House of Lords. It's just, again, it's very odd to see this person bounce around all these right-wing political movements. Effectively, as an unrepentant communist.
Look who shows up here as well. This one, Nigel Farage. As far as I know, she hasn't been back. She was soon signed up by Nigel Farage and won a seat in the European Parliament. Now Fox is running with a different gang of Northerners. The Viscount Bookborough, the Viscount Craig of Vaughan, Lord Brown of Belmont, the Lord Willie Hay of Ballyor, the Lord blah blah blah, Lord Trimble of Pocketing, just a never-ending list of, like...
Lords and ladies,
yes. Obviously, these people are also... all communists, I would presume.
Probably at some point, yes. But once again, it seems that Nigel Farage has no problem appointing revolutionary communists to be candidates for his Brexit party. Well, when he was in the head of it anyway. But that's kind of funny that you've got both Nigel Farage here elevating this woman and Boris Johnson here elevating this woman into the House of Lords, despite her really not having much of a public political career, or at least one that we're aware of. So we now have a revolutionary communist in the House of Lords. This is a quick kind of power-based thing.
I was going to say, this starts to come to the point of how does this affect us?
Yeah, yeah. How is this relevant to us? Well, Claire Fox is also she leads the Institute for Ideas. And the Institute for Ideas has managed to sneak itself into our spaces using the Battle of Ideas. It's part of what is referred to as the LM network, or the Living Marxism network, because really that was, as we saw earlier, that was the magazine, that was the publication that the Revolutionary Communist Party put out. It was Living Marxism. And as we'll get to, the direct sequel to Living Marxism, and not just the tangential, but the direct sequel is Spiked
Online. With all the same people involved.
With all the same people involved, is Spiked Online.
Let's look at the key people list on the right there, if that's not cropped out on everyone else's view. I'm sure people will recognise some of these names. Frank Ferretti.
Yes.
Michael Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Claire Fox.
Yes.
Helen Goldberg.
Brandon O'Neill.
James Hartfield.
Or Brendan O'Neill.
Mick Hume. Phil Mullen. You know... I recognise some of these people.
It's just the same thing. It's just the Revolutionary Communist Party. And yes, if you have interacted with the Battle of Ideas, if you've been to it, if you've seen content from it, congratulations, you're watching revolutionary communist conservative content.
Yes.
Without knowing it. And most people, if you went up to most people and went, you know, this is a communist conference, right? They'd look at you funny. But because of the layers of removal, even though it's obvious, even though if you look at it for 2 minutes, it's obvious what this is. And yet, because you have the Institute of Ideas, the Academy of Ideas, and then it does its little conference, which is the Battle of Ideas. Mm. And we'll get to why Trotskyists might be quote-unquote free speech absolutists near the end as well, because it does take a rather dark turn.
Yes. any specific bits on this page alone that you'd like to read?
Not really. We'll go. They're all part of the same network. So when we get to the funding part of this, I'll be able to explain that all of this living Marxism.
Let's for a laugh have a look at the pledges for progress section. Anyway,
yes,
yes. 21 pledges for progress 2010. Policy ideas that would make candidates worth voting for. Sorry, give me a second.
Just stop there.
No, sorry, I'm just a bit dry from the food I've eaten. Number one, repeal hate speech legislation. In the interests of free speech, no ifs, no buts. Repeal the UK's libel laws in the interests of free speech. Stop bureaucratic CRB checks and vetting of adults who come into contact with children and vulnerable adults in the interests of free association between generations. I kind of don't want to read anymore after that.
A lot of it is boilerplate stuff, but yeah, well, a lot of it is hiding in popular ideas. And really,
there's another interesting one there. Number seven, scrap the database state, including the contact point database, which holds information about every child in the country, and the DNA database, which includes details of criminal suspects without convictions in the interest of civil. They want to get rid of the Sex Offenders Registry.
Effectively, yes. That's kind of what's being said in this.
Or number 10 as well. Open the borders, revoking all immigration controls in the interest of the free movement of citizens.
This is how, again, communists adopt libertarian rhetoric. They adopt what is considered popular libertarian rhetoric, in quotes, to further their aims.
Well, it's just so simple, isn't it? These people respect your right to say you're against immigration, but they don't respect your ability to move politically against it.
No. welcome. Anyway, but that's where the Battle of Ideas comes. And here we are. Here's the Battle of Ideas. You wouldn't know it from looking at it. And again, they do advertise themselves. The transformation here has come fully. We've gone from, like, Trotskyites, university students...
To Jordan Peterson.
To Jordan Peterson, yeah. They have been the Trotskyites, okay. Via something like the Battle of Ideas, which includes, you know, Jordan Peterson-style figures, it tries to flirt with the intellectual dark web people, it tries to flirt even with people like Dankula and people like that, who are effectively...
We know people have been to these.
We know people have been to these, we know people have spoken at these, people have tried to say that these are very, very good things, but there is an agenda behind it, and that agenda is revolutionary communist Trotskyites who are trying to make sure that all ideas are on the table.
Yes.
I just think it's very funny that things have gone so far. Things have progressed so far in like a march to the institutions, leftward thing. There's so much of a win more going on that the Trots have been team balanced onto the blue side, onto the conservative side. They have done team balancing, and now we have Trotskyite Tories.
Yes, and I think this is partially the point that we can maybe make on the next piece as well,
yes.
And it's definitely a point I made on the stream with AA last night, that the free speech issue...
This is the why we free, made...
Free yeah. expression is the ultimate sort of united front for all of these types who want power, who want their own little finger in the populist pie, but still want to oppose agendas that they don't like. Because they'll allow you to say what you want, but they have no interest in allowing you to do what you want. Especially if you are someone who is genuinely anti-progressive, genuinely anti-immigrant. Or, you know, maybe you just don't care about free speech in the first place because you realize it's a waste of time.
Tell you what, it's probably a little bit better to keep reading from some of this. Is there any more of this that you'd like to we could go about over the lawsuit and some of the stuff, but really what to give you a summary, having read all these, what the Revolutionary Communist Party was in its early days was something of Frank Ferretti's cabal.
Yes.
It was something of a cult of personality. It had a very in-group tight structure to it. You must think of the Revolutionary Communist Party not as a political party, not as a labor movement, but as an organized minority. They are a
Yes.
classic organized minority that attempted to essentially break away from what was in the 1970s, the completely failing traditional Marxist framework. Marxism in the 1970s in Britain died. Like,
Yes.
classic Marxism completely went away. It was not an idea that held
Well,
sway by the 1980s.
that's something that even Bowden has discussed in his rather
Yes.
good talk on the left in Britain, is the sort of militant anti-liberal Leninist. You know, the really hardcore sort of leftist types just don't exist anymore. And what's left of them have to basically be sort of directed around by these chameleon, take on whatever shape they need to be, political actors who are, you know, interested in power and success first and ideas laterally.
It's explained here, it's a splinter group of a splinter group of a splinter group, the original Revolutionary Communist Party. And they went through a phase of,
Well, there
there's
were.
another one here, this is from Jacobin, and this is the strange odyssey of Britain's Revolutionary Communist Party. But this goes through some of the same stuff in that they kind of had a break with a lot of the race stuff. They had a break with a lot of the what was kind of emerging of woke stuff. What
Yes.
we can see them is as anti-woke communists. I'll keep saying that because it's true. They are what anti-woke communism looks like. And they've also had a kind of a moment of there's an essay, quite a famous essay called Leaving the Proletariat or Beyond the Proletariat, depending on how you translate it, that was a lot of the thinkers, and a couple of the culmination of a lot of the communist thinkers in the 1980s, getting to the 1990s, realizing that really, because we live in a society that doesn't have mass manufacturing employment like it used to, that the old idea of the proletariat doesn't hold sway. It's wrong. Marxism needs to move beyond the proletariat if it is to survive. And really, that is the underlying philosophy that the Revolutionary Communist Party adopted. Their whole shtick has been attempting to modify kind of classical Marxism into a way that it will be relevant to modern Britain, and two, to create a structure, especially post lawsuit, as we'll get into, especially post their official Marxist phase, moving into a way of influencing UK policy on areas such as abortion, the age of consent. Policy towards paedophiles. Spoiler alert, we'll get into that later.
And anti-Semitism
And
legislation.
anti-Semitism
The only
legislation.
racism that actually matters.
Yes. So we'll get to that confluence later of paedophile advocacy, abortion advocacy, and anti-Semitism prevention advocacy. And all three of those do seem to go together rather often.
Well, I mean, where best to start than Frank Ferretti?
Yes. Going to say what I will quickly go through here is the fact that the 1990s saw the RCP undergo significant changes. In his account for the group's life, former leading member Michael Fitzpatrick identifies the first half of the 1990s as a turning point. According to Fitzpatrick, the RCP now argued that the working class has disappeared as a political force, deeming its role as a would-be revolutionary party to be redundant. It stressed a shift towards advancing an intellectual rather than practical alternative. One of the major causes for this shift was the end of the Cold War and the collapse of the Eastern Bloc. Again, the RCP's writing at the end of the 90s in the RCP's new magazine, Living Marxism, this will become quite important. Frank Richards argued that the situation in Britain and Eastern Europe demonstrate that both Labourism and Stalinism had failed.
Yeah, Frank Richards is, of course, not that person's real name, but we'll
No.
get
Yes, Frank
there.
Richards is, I believe, Frank Ferretti.
Yes.
Over the next half decade, the RCP reinvented itself. The class struggle now took a backseat to the battle of ideas, and living Marxism became the de facto party, with practical organization increasingly seen as a dead end. The RCP argued that any political alternative needed to be developed intellectually first and foremost. It's basically the opposite of our approach.
Well, yeah, but their whole thing is like, the Conservative Party will welcome us in. Let's take advantage of this. You know, whereas we always put our hands up and say the Conservative Party wants to welcome you in, that's why you should run away.
Well, what happened was, and we should probably finish this story here quickly, is that in the RCP's final year of existence, LM published a new manifesto titled The Point is to Change It. It still emphasised the policies that the magazine had published during the 90s, but now jettisoned the party organisation. A debate about the value of the RCP as a revolutionary party had been in progress for a few years, and it was possible to wage the battle of ideas without party structures. They've kind of realised what a lot of people have realised, in that in a traditional party structure, if you can just be a behind-the-scenes organised minority, is completely pointless.
Yeah.
You don't need very much apart from being an organised minority, and that is what the Revolutionary Communist Party journey demonstrates above all. The year after the RCP's dissolution, were dominated by a libel case that the broadcaster ITN and two journalists brought against the magazine. An issue of LM in 1997 published an article that questioned the veracity of ITN's reporting on the camp in Tripoli during the Balkan Wars in the 1990s. Ironically, something that they have been since largely vindicated on.
Ironic,
isn't it? The only thing that they do that was actually had some balls to it, they get slapped down and basically disbanded for and have to retool themselves. But we'll leave that journey there. The Revolutionary Communist Party has been jettisoned. Living Marxism has disbanded due to a very large libel case, which is why they're very big on their anti-libel stuff. And that's where we'll find it. But really, to understand what's going on here, we must take a journey into the heart of the Revolutionary Communist Party and talk about its founder, Frank Furedi. Frank Furedi was originally from Hungary, but emigrated to Canada after the failed 1950s uprising. He's somebody who did a bachelor's degree, blah, blah, blah. RCP and its offshoots. The former student radical, he became involved in left-wing politics in Britain in the 1970s, in particular a member of the International Socialists. Under the pseudonym Frank Richards, that's why it says Frank Richards in there, with his followers, he was expelled from the IS in 1973 and formed the Revolutionary Communist Group, and then broke from that in 1976 to form the Revolutionary Communist Tendency, refounded as the Revolutionary Communist Party in 1978. He's in December 1990, the RCP's magazine Living Marxism ran an article by Freddie entitled The Midnight in the Century, which argued that the corrosive effect of the collapse of both Stalinism and reformism on the working class, and that for the time at least, the working class has no political existence, as we went into earlier. This signaled the reorientation of the party towards more libertarian positions and its formal dissolution by the end of the decade. Freddie is now associated with the RCP's successor, the website Spiked Online.
Thanks, Wikipedia. You made our job very easy there.
But we'll get to that. And he's still writing for Spiked Online.
Oh, this one's a good one. There's some stuff in this that's worth reading because it's just
the woke scapegoating of Jews. The Western left's response to Hamas's atrocities has exposed the virulent new form of anti-Semitism.
This is like one of my tweets I wrote about this period of stuff expanded as like an article, but seriously, instead of as like a joke.
I'll let you read this one then. What highlights would you like from Frank Furedi? Just to give a flavour of the man, and then we'll get into a bit more of how he's influenced its structure.
We'll do the first few and then the last one, because I do believe the last one in this is also a bit egregious.
Okay, go ahead.
The assault on southern Israel, quoting Nigel Farage, last weekend, was more than an atrocity. This callous and systematic murder of civilians was nothing less than a 21st century version of a barbaric pogrom. The video was recorded by Hamas operatives as they slaughtered people serve as a frightening testimony to human depravity. They more than match the numerous beheading videos that glorified the barbarism of Islamic State and other terrorist organisations in recent decades. It's an interesting spin from a man who defended Saddam Hussein in the IRA.
Yes.
Seeing the Hamas orchestrated pogrom was gut-wrenching. But what I have found almost as disturbing are the smug voices of those in the West who say that Israel is responsible for Hamas's barbarism, that it brought this horror on itself. Ever since Hamas operatives embarked on a depraved killing spree, self-styled progressives have been queuing up to tell anyone who will listen that the evil Zionists had it coming. No comment. Not even this week's report of Hamas's massacre of babies, which turned out to be completely false,
yes,
have given them pause for reflection. Their victim blaming is echoed by numerous Western Muslim organisations and even by some mainstream politicians. They too see Israel had it coming. With his usual smug complacency, former Greek minister Yanis Varoufakis declared in an interview that he would never denounce Hamas for these atrocities. I can imagine Faridi probably spent decades writing lovingly about Varoufakis.
Yes.
He is there to the leather jacket, motorbike driving communist guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Woo! And now he's, oh no, I have to pretend I care about Israel now. Pointing a finger at Israel, he stated that the path to ending the tragic loss of innocent lives, both Palestinian and Israeli, begins with one crucial first step, the end of Israeli occupation and apartheid. I will leave a moment or two so that people in the chat can guess what kind of Hungarian Frank Faridi might be.
I was going to say yes. It should be obvious by now, but can you guess what kind of Hungarian Frank Faridi is?
Do you want to do some of the super chats we've got before I read the last paragraph for this?
Oh, sure. Before we finish this, we'll quickly read some super chats here. Thank you, Mr. Panama Hat there. For the £10, Mr. Panama Hat says, this is vital stuff. The Freedom Right are all frauds and chumps. These Tory organs and men from Swindon who shall not be named will drag the entire right into a pit of humiliating failure. It's all interconnected, and we'll get to some of the interconnects between the stuff we've talked about in this later, but yes. And Lewis, and thank you for the £10, Mr. Panama Hat. Lewis Shaw Moffat with the £5 said, I called it years ago. All the liberal stuff has always been commies. Don the Pleb has been vindicated. Alas, too late. Again, we have to be quite accurate. We don't like going around just calling people communists, but they're communists.
If you're going to be part of a group that calls itself the Revolutionary Communist Party, I mean, I don't want to make the mistake that James Burnham warns against. Which is partly what we're trying to warn people as well with here, but yes, they do call themselves communists, so we should probably call them communists too. Yeah, just scroll up so we've got the last couple paragraphs there.
Graham Linehan and Brandon O'Neill live in conversation!
Wait, in the same place at the same time?
Oh no, where is it?
Yeah, we'll go from here.
Yeah.
Lurking behind the campaign to devalue the moral status of Jewish people is the pathologization of Israel. So just as Jews have been cast as hyper-white symbols of white supremacy, Israel has emerged as the exemplar of Western impression and imperialism. In this ways, Jews have re-emerged as the all-purpose 21st century scapegoat. Today we see the convergence of three different strands of anti-Jewish sentiment: Islamist, traditional European, an identitarian, which has revitalized anti-Semitism. This is why the loss of Jewish life can be met with such indifference, even by a supposedly fervent advocate of human rights like Maggie Chapman. So thoroughly dehumanized is the Jew among sections of the Western left today that they are willing to excuse a pogrom. What a shame, those terrible people. Those who collaborated with the Nazis would often claim that they didn't know that the Nazis were planning to exterminate Jewish people. Today's left-wing collaborators have no such excuses. The atrocities perpetrated by Hamas are there for all to see. Thank you, Frank. Stunning and brave.
Stunning and brave. But yes, this is the rhetoric that these people bring into the quote-unquote right. I was fortunate, or should I say unfortunate enough, to actually listen to something by Frank Faridi. I can't say where, and I can't say the content of it, because it was done under Chatham House rules, and I use that in its literal, not its literal sense, but you know what I mean? I wasn't actually at Chatham House, but I am privy to some certain things behind the scenes. And I was, one, deeply unimpressed by his libertarian, like, 2010 soup of ideas. And also, it became increasingly clear that a lot of these ideas are, one, because of the alarm that some of the left are also feeling about the state of the system, and the pure delusion of the intelligentsia of the left. And also because it is a great way to clothe yourself in populist ideas. It felt like a populist grab bag. He really said nothing.
Yes.
He said very little. What he said sounded like a, you know, like a 2014 Thunderfoot video or something like that. It was extremely, extremely limited hangout libertarianism from somebody who is a former revolutionary communist. And the thing is that his nominal right-wing ideas are so paper-thin that it is very easy to see him very simply as the leader of a pragmatic set, like the Fabian Society, of people who want to be in power, are figuring out how to be in power, and are willing to say anything to remain relevant to the power centre.
Well, let's not totally besmirch the man yet anyway, because maybe this is all just politicking. And at home, and in his family life, maybe the Ferreddies, and I say the Ferreddies plural, are good people.
They're trying to shut us down. October 20th, 2004. Pregnancy, let me see if this is cutting it off. It is cutting it off. Shimmed.
Yeah, that'll do.
That'll do. I'm afraid this is a bit zoomed out, but pregnancy advisor Anne Ferreddy vilified for informing women about late, in scare quotes, clinics in Spain, tells Mick Hume why she is so angry at the despicable campaign being waged against her. Do you want to read this one? Because this is them trying to defend her, but as this goes on, some of the what she does, what she's part of, and what she was basically caught doing is extremely alarming. And you may remember this scandal about people being recommended beyond 24-week abortions. And by the way, that is a six-month pregnant woman after 24 weeks. Just remember that as we move forward.
Yes. But today she faces a challenge from opponents less violent but rather more threatening. As chief executive of the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, how Frank Ferreddy's wife ever ended up in this position as another foreign Jewish person, I don't know either, but, you know, who else would do the job?
I've got to say, yes, you don't need the early life of Anne Ferreddy. She is also somebody who is a, I guess, very similar lineage and very, very... They're both Jewish. There's no way around it.
Not that there's
anything wrong with that. It is just, as we go forward, that is just some humble context.
As chief executive of the British Pregnancy Advisory Board, the leading abortion charity, she's been accused by a national newspaper of helping women to obtain illegal late abortions in Spain. Pardon me.
Let me read this.
No, I've got it. They've got Jonah Jepson, the young blonde curate, prompted a police investigation of doctors who aborted a fetus with a cleft palate. Lined up as the champion on the side of good, Ferreddy told me now they're trying to personalise the pro-choice side by setting up BPAS, and me in particular, as the personification of evil illegal abortions. Maybe because
you are. Yes, the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, by the way, is the biggest abortion entity in Britain. Biggest advisor, biggest policy advisor, and also provides a quarter of all UK abortions were headed up by Frank Ferreddy's wife, the revolutionary communist, who has ties to people who march around and give orders within the Conservative Party, and who is also attached to people who are now lifetime peers. Why is this staple to the right wing in Britain?
That's interesting. An undercover reporter from the Sunday Telegraph, claiming to be 26 weeks pregnant beyond Britain's legal limit of 24, alleges that she requested an abortion. BPAS referred her to a Barcelona clinic where she was offered a termination and told staff they would falsify records. John Reid, the health secretary, has reportedly asked the chief medical officer to investigate. Anne Widdecombe MP, the former Conservative minister, has tabled a parliamentary motion calling for the immediate withdrawal of the £12 million of government funding from BPAS and for the charity to be closed down. The Sunday Telegraph alleges that Ferretti runs BPAS as a crusader. In a rare personal column, Dominic Lawson, the paper's editor, claimed that Ferretti has a fundamentally political motivation to provide abortions regardless of the law. In years to come, he argued, her views on women's rights to late abortion will seem as barbaric and bizarre as the advocacy of slavery and forced sterilization seems to us today. The paper seemed particularly incensed by her refusal to apologise, making a banner headline out of her initial insouciant response. So what is your point exactly? So is Ferretti Britain's Madame Abortion, a hard-faced, baby-hating harridan? The unattractive image does not match the women I know.
Oh, yeah, thanks for the disclosure, though. Thanks for the disclosing that. So this is just that, this is one of her Trotskyist media friends.
What, Mick Hume?
Yeah.
As one of the Revolutionary Communist Party people that was listed earlier on.
Yes, I was going to say this. I was about to say.
If you've got the Power Base one still up, I'm not sure if you do. I can quickly check though if you want.
Yes. Well, Mick Hume is one of the Revolutionary Communist Party people. Yes, it has been written by one of her friends, one of her Communist Party insider friends. They're trying to run defence.
Whilst he's got a job at the Sunday Times.
Yeah, whilst he's got a job at the Sunday Times, they're trying to run defence. This cabal of people for illegal referral for like late, super late term abortion, and she won't apologise for it. She won't acknowledge that it was wrong, and the reason for that is because this is representative of her beliefs. Here's another one. This is from The Telegraph. This is again from, this is from 2013, I believe. But here she is again. She's still the head of the largest abortion organisation. This is 9 years later. 9 years after she's sending women overseas for illegal abortions where they offer to falsify records. She's still here. Women are legally free to abort a baby because of its sex, says abortion charity head. The chief executive of Britain's biggest abortion charity has said women are legally free to arrange an abortion because they are happy with the sex of their unhappy with the sex of their unborn baby. Again, why is this cabal of people in all of these positions and deciding all of these policies? Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Is the quote you've got in the document there from this article?
Yes, it is.
Or from the next? Yes, I don't know if you want to just scroll to that.
Where is that? I'm not really sure.
It's just the part where it's, however, Mrs. Ferretti, whose charity carries out more than a quarter of abortions in England and Wales, argued that if doctors believe going ahead with a pregnancy would damage the mental health of the mother, the abortion is within law.
Yes, writing for the online magazine Spiked, a call comes back around. She said, a doctor agreeing to an abortion on grounds of rape would be breaking the law no more and no less than a doctor who agrees an abortion on the grounds of sex selection. She said, yes, well, it is true that the sex of the fetus is not a legal ground for abortion, nor is rape or incest, or being 13 years old, nor is being homeless, nor abandoned, nor just feeling there's no way you can bring a child into the world. Yet they are all reasons why a doctor may believe a woman has met the legal grounds of abortion. She's basically saying, look, the legal grounds of abortion are fuzzy. She is the reason that Britain, even though it was never meant to on paper, even though within law we don't have it, Anne Ferretti is the reason that on-demand abortion is effectively legal in Britain. She was the driving force behind it. She has wheedled through all of these. She sent women abroad, and she's now arguing that the, you know, the two-doctor rule, the harm rule, can extend to a woman who is so mentally distressed by the fact she might have a boy instead of a girl that she should be able to abort the baby. Yep. And this is a woman who is ostensibly supposed to be part of the British right, as it were, or at least in terms of her grouping.
Yes.
She is part of this group of people who has injected themselves into the British right, and yet she is a late-term abortion advocate who wants you to be able to abort your baby because of its sex.
What was it in one of the other articles, I think? I can't remember, maybe it's the link you've got coming up next or not, but I think we are talking about something in the order of 50 to 60,000 a year at least.
Yes. I don't know if we have that up here, but basically, yes. The number of abortions that have been carried out by... in fact, we can actually go and get that, because I know we had that on the BPAS website. Here it is. Figures show...
Yeah, it's the one you've got as a link. That's
oh, it is. Okay, we already have that one. Good, good, good. We do have it. Do you want to quickly get this one, then?
Data released today, 22nd of June 2023, by the Department of Health shows an increase of 17% in the number of abortions in England and Wales. Between January and June 2022, there were 123,219 abortions performed on residents of England and Wales. This compares with 105,488 over the same period in 2021. I suppose that was maybe the one good, actually wholly organically good thing that lockdown did, is it yes. shut down enough of the NHS that there was 20,000 less abortions during that period.
Yes.
But yeah, there isn't much else really to comment here on this, because this really just gives you an idea of the scale that they were operating at.
And yes,
and not only were they doing that, at the same time, Anne Ferreddy and Mick Hume and all their pals are running a pro-choice forum that's an extension of the Living Marxism magazine all at once.
Yes, they are.
So they're not even just killing children, they're also running a magazine and a lobbying group to help normalise the notion of killing children. And here's your same people again. Frank Ferreddy, Fitzpatrick, Claire Fox, Goldberg,
Mick Hume,
who was Brendan O'Neill.
Who was writing the article about his friend defending her late-term abortions as part of a revolutionary communist cabal. Yep. And that's why I don't like Claire Fox, because Claire Fox is part of a revolutionary communist cabal with a woman who eats babies. Well, a woman who kills babies for fun, for a living. She is a baby death advocate of the most repugnant nature. As I said, she believes that you should be able to send women overseas for illegal late-term abortions, will not apologise for it. She believes that you should be able to kill children because of their sex. She does not apologise for it. She is cartoonishly evil. She is one of the best representations of why, like, the pro-abortionists are so revolting. They just make your skin crawl because they're so unapologetic. And yes, she does have an ideological interest in it. And she does have an ethnic interest in it as well, because of the two things that make up her identity, which is her communism and who she is. But anyway.
Oh no. I looked something up based on what someone else said in chat. I've come across one of Frank Ferreddy's early articles in 2012 as an independent essay he wrote. The bigotry of anti-circumcision zealots.
Yes, I did see that. So we also did do it, yes. But, we should be very glad that Anne Ferreddy decided not to abort her own son.
Of course not, because who else would have been the editor of Unheard?
Who else would be the deputy editor of Unheard but one Jacob Ferreddy?
Let's have a brief scroll here and look at the nature of some of the articles he writes as well. Oh, Andrew Tate, geopolitics.
Anyway, so now we have the son of the founder of a revolutionary communist cabal, and his mother is the abortionist, the arch abortionist in Britain, and yet he's a deputy editor of a publication whose writers we are told we have to play ball with.
Well,
is going on in the British right?
Now we know who Unheard is for, though. It's for Paul Marshall,
yeah,
Tim Montgomery, abortion advocates, communists, and child murderers.
Yes, it is. And I don't know, maybe we'll never meet Mary Harrington. Everybody keeps saying good things about her, but she works for the man who set up the... Well, she works for the outlet who was set up by the same person who set up, you know, the Institute for Social Justice. We've been over Tim Montgomery. We've been over Paul Marshall and who they are and what they fund. And now we're getting into some more of their staff and who they are.
It's a very dirty end of the Tory octopus, isn't it?
Yes. Again, it's a big club, you're not in it, and yet people are in it who we are supposed to play ball with. And that's why we don't play nice with some others. That's why we don't play nice with the Mary Harringtons of this world. Because they are sent by people like this. You don't hear me flustered very often, but like what Anne Ferreddy advocates for is one of the most evil things I can imagine. She is at the helm of a baby murdering machine and advocates for more of it for more reasons. She wants it later.
Less control.
More abortions, damn it. And this is the British right.
And the battle of ideas and the Institute of Ideas wants less protection for children and wants generational discrimination or whatever they called it to be broken down. And just in case you think we're a little bit mental, there's even a Guardian article that proves that one Jacob Ferretti is his son.
Yeah, scared silly. In his book, Parent and Parenting, Frank Ferretti is not a relaxed parent. He can be laid back about some things. His five-year-old son, Jacob, so it's not a coincidence. He's not just called Ferretti, that he's his son.
Well, think about this, though. 2001, he's writing parenting books.
Yeah.
Raising his own son, whilst he's part of a group of people who, let's put it this way, we have made it quite clear, do not like children. And the only way they like children is liking them too much. I'm just going to say poor Jacob, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Well, here we go. Anti-statism and the trajectory from the Revolutionary Communist Party to Spiked. Here we get into the trajectory of what we see today. We've talked about the Freddy family. We now get on to Spiked Online. Spiked Online just is. It is a direct successor to Living Marxism, which was the Revolutionary Communist Party's magazine. They lost a libel suit about the Bosnian genocide. It had most of the same staff from former Revolutionary Communist Party voices, such as Mick Hume, again, Frank Ferretti, Claire Fox, Brendan O'Neill, James Hartfield, Michael Fitzpatrick, and James Woodhuizen. It is just all the same people.
The same story here about them getting done over the ITN case, I believe, as well.
In the last 20 years, Spiked has become an increasingly vocal and visible actor in Britain's culture wars, combining libertarianism and right-wing populism with a penchant for contrarianism. A number of its editorial team and contributors have made headway in the mainstream media, such as Frank Ferretti, Donna Williams, Mick Hume, Brendan O'Neill, and Tom Slater. At the same time, Claire Fox was an MEP for the Brexit Party and is now Baroness of the House of Lords. Musa Morazi, foreign name, is a chief political advisor to Boris Johnson. As Spiked appears to have gained access to the corridors of power and scaled the heights of the media as British politics lurches to the right. This is written by leftists. This paper will discuss how the RCP transformed from a small Trotskyist party in the 1980s into the notorious website that Spiked is today, developing what critics have referred to as the RCPLM Spiked Network.
I think it might be worth going through not the paragraph below in the little quote bit.
Here we go.
Although the trajectory from far left to the right is not an uncommon phenomenon, the shift en masse from the RCP to Spiked via Living Marxism, which kept much of the same leading personnel intact, you don't say, and with few openly breaking with the party network, is more unique. As Chris Gilligan, a former RCP member, has noted, this network seems to be quite a conscious decision made in the late 1990s. Citing Dolan Cummings, writing for the Spiked Review of Books in 2007, I never left the
RCP. We already
RCP.
Read this one.
Ah, right, is that the...
Yeah.
Right, that's another quote of Claire Fox.
It is a Claire Fox, yes.
Over the years, the former RCP members who made the initial translation into LM and Spiked have fallen away or become less involved, even though their public criticisms of their ex-comrades is muted. Looking at the RCP through the lens of its successors, there has been a debate about whether the RCP was part of the left. For example, Andy Beckett wrote in The Guardian, despite its name, most of its stances were not communist or revolutionary, but contrarian. It supported free speech for racists and nuclear power. It attacked environmentalism and the NHS. Its most consistent impulse was to invoke an idealised working class and claim it was actually being harmed by the supposed elites of the liberal left.
Well, again, there is some debate about whether or not these people are right-wingers who pretended to be leftists and have returned to form, or whether these are leftists who turn to pragmatism in terms of how they survive the death of Marxism in Europe. I'd say it doesn't matter in many ways. I'd say that the end result is that these people are a small, organised minority who will take money from anybody and say anything to further their slightly nebulous goals. But we can look at, very, very clearly, who funds them, what they're saying, and we can try and glean some of their agendas from that.
We'll move on then.
Here we go. This is Power Base seems slightly not obsessed with living Marxism, but really I think that the living Marxism nexus is why partially why the website Power Base was founded.
Probably.
Because a lot of people on the left were very, very, very concerned and were a little bit alarmed by these people and how they just seemed to wander around different places willy-nilly ideologically.
There's a lot of interesting names in here as well.
Yes.
None of the organizations associated with an LM network provides a breakdown of funders and how much they have provided. We do know, however, that they are funded by corporations that fund think tanks dedicated to promoting their interests in the political and media spheres. For example, the pharmaceutical company Pfizer has funded Spiked.
Yes.
The Institute of Ideas, Battle of Ideas in 2005 and 2006. The Debating Matters program.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Sorry, they've been team balanced by the left back onto the right now.
Yes.
Team balancing alert.
And the Debating Matters program and two organizations which the LM network has connections at the Science Media Center and Sense About Science. Both of these latter are engaged in managing debates about scientific issues. Isn't that interesting, though?
Yes.
You know, maybe that would explain why Spiked at the start of lockdown supported the idea.
Yes.
Because maybe you got money from Pfizer. As well as funding the LM network, Pfizer funds free market think tanks such as the Competitive Enterprise Institute and Cato Institute and the Netherlands-based Edmund Burke Foundation, blah, blah, blah.
The Brussels-based Centre for New Europe, which I believe that Freddie's been associated with as well, which also does work on climate funded by Exxon.
The UK's Social Market Foundation, which I believe we've talked before a number of times.
And the American Council on Science and Health, a deceptive front group. Pfizer is a member of one of the most important global corporate lobby groups, the International Chamber of Commerce. It's very, very odd to see Pfizer supporting this network of revolutionary communists who have wheedled their way into power. But anyway,
BT is another major sponsor of the LM network. BT sponsored the Battle of Ideas in 2006, 7 and 8.
It's a bit
in addition, then, BT subsidiary O2 sponsored 5 Spiked debates during 05, 06 and 07, while another was sponsored by Orange. The Mobile Operators Association is also on record as having funded Spiked. In return, BT, O2 and other operators had the opportunity via Spiked to challenge public concern about the perceived effects on health, child protection and the environment of mobile phones.
Woo! Well, it's what they've done is what all of these intellectuals, in quotes, who burrow their way into a position of power do. They are talking heads for hire.
Mirror.
They will suckle up to any part of the power centre because they are pragmatists. They are pragmatist members of the elite class, and that's what they do. Anyway.
Other corporations and corporate lobby groups that have funded the LM network are Cadbury, Schweppes, IBM, Novartis, Orange, O2, the Mobile Operators Association, and the Society of the Chemical Industry. These sources of funding are typical of lobbying and or PR firms. Unsurprisingly, some of the biggest lobby firms also fund the network. Hill and Knowlton is one of the most controversial lobbying and PR firms in the world, having famously been behind the deception on the incubator baby story in Kuwait in 1990-91. It also worked for a list of controversial corporations, including the oil, tobacco, pharma, fast food and GM industry. It worked too for repressive regimes including Egypt, Haiti, Indonesia, Morocco, Turkey and China after the Tiananmen Square massacre, along with PR firm Luther Pendragon, which has worked for the Hinduja brothers, McDonald's, Pepsi, the GM industry and others. Hill and Knowlton has put up cash for LM network events.
It's a nexus that those of you who follow our streams will know that we mentioned the babies and incubators Kuwait story that effectively brought America into the first Gulf War as one of the kind of prime examples that America's never had a quote-unquote pure war and that all these information wars are always going on. Babies and incubators are one of the most obvious instances of a PR firm via the security state inventing a sob story, selling it to Congress, selling it to the American people, but it turning out to be an absolute lie. And yet we find them in this nexus. We find them in this nexus of these people. It's almost like a greatest hits in certain ways.
Yes.
Everybody's coming up. So really what we can see here is kind of a nexus here. We have spikes in the Battle of Ideas, which is just living Marxism. It is just living Marxism and the Revolutionist Communist Party, and they are sponsored by Pfizer, Hill and Nolan Strategies, the Cato Institute, and as we'll get to, the Koch Family Foundation. They also receive quite a large amount of Koch Brothers money.
I was going to say, maybe when Mary Mirza, or whatever the fuck her name is, went on to say about the fact that there's not enough ideas and free thought on the far left, what she actually meant was there isn't enough, like, corporatist wheel greasing going on for her liking.
Yeah. I will go through here because there's a bit about the thing with George Moinbot here, but yes, it turns out that Spiked USA, specifically the US arm of it, has received $300,000 in total from the Koch brothers. The Kochs are mentioned in several Spike articles, but no corresponding interests are declared. The article in 2016, when Spike US received $170,000 from Charles Koch Foundation, attacks the Standing Rock protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline, in which the Koch brothers have a major interest. Again, a leftist talking point, but a genuine conflict of interest. And a genuine kind of money in media scandal as well. It's just very funny. There's also, we can see here, is that the Henry Jackson Society, who we've covered before, are quite proud of having articles been placed in Spiked.
Yep.
They have a whole section on their website which shows the articles they've had placed in Spiked.
But we also know Frank Ferretti is a regular speaker at many of their events.
Yes. Ricky Beshan.
Ricky Beshan. Oh, it's just like him again.
Spike has kind of fallen somewhat recently. It was a lot bigger, I would say, kind of 2016 to 2019, and it lost its way a little bit. But there is, again, it plays host, and everyone in the Tory octopus is very happy.
Yes.
Very happy to interact with all these revolutionary communists because they're advising their prime ministers. They're sitting in the House of Lords for the Conservative Party. They are paid up.
Frank Ferretti's on the New Culture Forum, or he's speaking at National Conservatism, or half of them are appearing at the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship.
But we now must move on to Brendan O'Neill. I hope this is loud. I might have to adjust the volume here, but I'll give you a quick introduction to Brendan O'Neill. Once a Trotskyist, O'Neill was formerly a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party. He wrote for the party's journal, Living Marxism. In 2019, O'Neill said he was a Marxist libertarian.
Which is why we're all blocked by him on Twitter.
Yeah, which is why we're all blocked by him on Twitter. But here he is on a terrible hat on Reason TV, by the way. The Reasonites.
Of course.
And this is him being asked about what he thinks of Trotsky.
Oh, don't tell me Darren Grimes is on there.
No, it's one of the Reasonites, but anyway.
My rallying cry is Trotsky's rallying cry. He said we have to increase the power of man over nature and decrease the power of man over man. I would challenge anyone to find a better description of progressive politics than that. And that is Spike's rallying cry. We want to increase the power of man over nature and decrease the power of man over man.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about Spike. How did it come?
Anyway, so that makes it very, very clear, I think, that...
That was good of you to leave that screen up so that people didn't have to see his horrible, shiny head.
I hate this clip. To be fair, the clip looks like shit. You're not really missing much. It's just an Instagram thing, and it won't go full screen properly. And it's a recording of a screen, I believe.
Yes.
But, yeah, here he is with his stupid hat on. On his Instagram. Again, I hate Instagram, but that was Brendan O'Neill, though, talking about how he's a Trotskyite, he loves Trotsky, Spiked's framework is Trotsky's framework, and Spiked is Trotsky's publication. you can't really... the containment points out itself. I don't know, he's also somebody who was responsible. I was going to do, like, a top five worst Brendan O'Neill articles, but I just think we can... read over the like some of the stuff he said. His response to being called out for taking Koch brothers money was basically to admit it, but say, oh, well, why is that a problem? Mm. Why is it a problem we take Koch Brothers' money? Oh, well, that doesn't... why is that a problem? Why is that a conflict of interest? And to be fair, all modern publications take, you know...
Well, let's...
The host pipe.
Let's just go for this little bit here, then. Mr. Moinbot's questions. Dear Brendan and Viv, I've been unable to contact you by phone as the number given on your site appears to be out of order. So could you please answer these questions by email or ring me back and the phone number removed? Please respond by noon on Monday, 3rd December. I'm writing a Guardian column on who funds Spiked. This is prompted by our discovery that Spiked has received through its US funding arm $170,000 over the past 2 years from the Charles Koch Foundation. I've been investigating this funding and its context in collaboration with DSmog UK. My questions are as follows. What was the stated purpose of these donations? Could I please see your application for funds to the Charles Koch Foundation? Could I please see the contract that accompanied this funding? Was the funding from the Koch Brothers Foundation covered by a confidentiality agreement? Have you publicly acknowledged this funding? If so, please provide a link. God. I'll take that as it is there.
Yeah, have you declared enough? A lot of it is just like journalists going, you have to play by the rules. This is, if you know who Moinbot is, this, and it's a inter-left spat, really.
Yes, of course.
This is an inter-left spat because Spiked has broken ranks and he's going after some of the climate change stuff. Partially as a populist thing, but partially as...
Primarily because it's taking money.
Yeah, primarily because it's taking money. But basically they came out and said, speech programs, £300,000 to produce public debates, blah, 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 blah. He basically comes out and says, well, we took Koch Brothers money, but it was for some free speech conference. So
my free speech.
And a lot of people go,
the unsafe space tour.
A lot of people are going, well, you know, they're anti-climate change. That's based. You're going after them. This is how the red team, blue team stuff works. Again, they have once again... what happened is that Brandon team balanced himself back into the left, but has also now team balanced himself back into the right. Well, a lot of team balancing going on here.
Because even though he wrote this, and you may think this redeems him in some way... It's only going to get worse.
It is, but I'm going to say that the red team, blue team stuff is how this stuff gets through.
Yes.
It's how they win. Mm. We know, as actual dissident people, that the Koch brothers are irredeemable neocons, that they are part of the same regime machine, and they just wear a different T-shirt. But if you are looking at this from an outside perspective, if you're quote-unquote on the British right, this is an attack on a right-wing publication that is climate sceptic, from a left-wing publication about money they're getting from a conservative funding source. To you, it is uncontroversial. But in objective terms, what they are doing is technically unethical. It is. But also what they are doing is a clear sign that they are aligned with the centre-point neocon down-the-road narrative.
Yep.
They are effectively taking the same money that the Henry Jackson Society takes, the Policy Exchange takes, that Nigel Farage has been taking, that all these people take to be the middle-of-the-road regime neocon. And really, that's the nexus. That is what everything tends towards. It's where Corbyn's going. It's where Spiked ended up. It's where the Conservative Party is. It's where everybody is in this central managerial position. It's because of the money behind it. And it's because of the fact that you can have these small groups of people who are able to be the mouthpieces for even smaller groups of people. But one of the other reasons as well, and why we talked about age of consent, abortion, all this stuff, is because Spiked Online can't stop attacking, first of all, Ted Kaczynski, and a Trotskyist calling other people basically wackos is very funny.
Ted K was so bonkers because he didn't believe in Marxism.
Yeah, but anyway, what really, really makes us revolted is the fact that Brendan O'Neill and others at Spiked are unapologetic paedophile advocates.
Yep.
They will defend the rights of paedophile. You know, a lot of people are free speech absolutists, you know, defend your right to say it. They will die for the rights of a paedophile to be a paedophile.
Yeah.
And they're quite explicit about this. They're quite explicit about that they are for maps, basically. Therefore, non-practicing paedophiles. They defend the right of people to be paedophiles.
In one way, shape, or form, they have been doing that for 20 years as well.
Yes, they have. And again, the NCCL was right to affiliate with PI. That's Liberty, which is the, you know... Liberty is its successor organisation, yes. And PI stands for Paedophile Information Exchange. The Civil Liberties Group... If civil liberties groups won't defend free speech for the unpopular, what's the point then? That is what the Battle of Ideas is for. This is why the Revolutionary Communist Party is so obsessed with free speech.
And this is who you stand with become obsessed with free speech.
Yes, this is who you stand with. This is who anybody at the Battle of Ideas stands with. This is the narrative. This is what's behind it. It is a group of communists attempting to normalise paedophilia through saying, well, if you're a free speech absolutist, you're for free speech for paedophiles. We've finally reached the end point, and why I wouldn't, you know, I can't stand someone like Claire Fox, because this is the cabal she is part of. She is part of the free speech means paedophiles cabal. Free speech means paedophiles too. No, it fucking doesn't, and that's why we don't stand for free speech.
Healthcare means late-term abortions.
Oh, look, Harriet Harman. state of moral and political debate in 21st century Britain, look no further than Harriet Harman and the Pi scandal. Here is the resurrection of all claims and smears about the relationship between the National Council of Civil Liberties and the Paedophile Information Exchange. We had the opportunity for a serious debate about freedom of speech and association, about whether even the most unpopular groups in society...
Association. I thought this was about speech.
Freedom, Spiked Online is a free speech outlet run by communists because their ultimate form of free speech and free association
is touching kids.
And what could be more unpopular than an organisation of self-identified paedophiles should have the right to exist and to give a voice to that ideology?
No.
It's simple. No. Give us
what is his conclusion paragraph here?
I'm trying to find the obvious meme here. But yes, let's go to the conclusions here, shall we? Because I don't want to read this whole fucking apologism.
It's easy to have a pop at Harriet Harman. Even easier to mock the Daily Mail for being hypocritical. But that's easy enough posturing. Let's now ask some hard questions. Do you support the right of paedophiles to set up an organisation? No, not a child sex ring, but a campaigning organisation. Those are the same thing. Do you support the right of paedophiles to publish their ideas and their written fantasies? Do you support the right of paedophiles to campaign for a reduction in the age of consent?
As parts of the Revolutionist Communist Party have done.
Do you support these rights even though you find the content of the material being published and the arguments for a lower age of consent to be deeply immoral and perverse? And I am quoting here.
Yeah.
I answer yes to those questions. How about you? I don't have a big enough wood chipper. That's my answer.
Yeah. I knew this was here. Because this is the ideology of the Revolutionary Communist Party. This and tens of thousands of extra abortions.
And welcome immigration and replacement and general sort of philo-Semitic inner group interest.
Welcome to the British right. And people, there was all those comments. I saw lots of, oh, everyone who's not me is containment. Like, look at it.
Do you need to see anymore?
Fucking look at this. Look at who they're stapling you to. Look at these people. Look at this cabal of people in unheard in the UK government, in the House of Lords, representing the right in media, being platformed everywhere. All the Tory think tanks platforming these people and then them platforming each other. This is who we are supposed to break bread with and who we are shouted down for saying should not have a method of reaching into our sphere. These are the people who are being allowed onto your platforms, in quotes. These are the people who are allowed to speak in your spaces. These are the people behind the free speech events like the Battle of Ideas, and that's the reason they have them. These are the people who are representing the libertarian right in Britain. Revolutionary, communist, child-murdering paedophiles.
Yeah.
The most awful person you can imagine. As I said, I don't usually get like personally invested in just... I find these people disgusting. Yes. I find them morally objectionable to a degree that it makes me genuinely angry. I'm trying to get tilted on this stream. But these people are evil. Well, they are incredibly evil.
Let me make this easier and also hard at the same time. Because there's more of this shit.
Here's Mick Hume, another revolutionary communist member.
Let's just keep getting through them.
The politics of a paedophile panic. Why supporters and opponents of Sharia law...
Sarah's law,
are as bad as one another.
Let's not. I don't need... Let's just point out that they're doing it.
Here's Brendan O'Neill again. Our need for pedos. Why society obsesses over child abuse. After Rolf, the Westminster child sex ring. Why the pedo scare won't die. Go and watch our White March stream if you want to get even angrier. Go and watch our White March stream in the wake of this being said about elite pedophiles. Brendan O'Neill is someone who will also just do cover for elite paedophiles. And here we go with another, Jan McTavish, who again is another member of this kind of nexus. She's another Kent University lecturer and another revolutionary communist alumni. And here she is, this is the worst one. Growing up with paedophiles, not so long ago, adults treated paedophiles with caution rather than dread.
I don't think I need to hear any more about this.
No nonsense. Not negotiable.
No.
And for nothing else, I will say that we should excise these people and anybody who would break bread with them without repudiating them before and afterwards.
Yep.
I felt like I had to do this as someone who listened to a lecture from Frank Freddy, because all this is going to have to come out someday. Yep. All of these people are going to have to be asked about why they did this, why they said this, and why they're saying that we should treat paedophiles with suspicion and not dread. I can't believe those words were written.
I'm going to put it this way. To those in chat, your homework this week is to take some of the links and the resources we have talked about. And if you see any of these people interacting with the right or trying to sell themselves to the conservative base, shame them. Shame them with all of this stuff. Because it's almost a sin upon ourselves to not do that.
Abortionists, communists and paedophiles. British right.
Yes.
We have some more super chats though. Don't worry, we don't miss any fan funding. We've been over those too quickly. Lewis Shaw Moffat, thank you for the extra £5. Rurik Skywalker on Substack has covered the slave lands deep lore as regards very similar problems in Russia. Not really sure what that's about. Here for the Brendan O'Neill and co bashing, thank you for the £2 current year, and thank you for the further £5 current year. It's regretful that I bought Mick Hume's book Trigger Warning and used to read spite articles back in the day. Who is most dangerous to our side? The thing is, it's basically a contiguous group. This is a small cabal within them, the kind of revolutionary communist alums, as it were. But it's a big club. This is the elite intellectual class of the British right. This is who they turn to when they look for ideas. This is the group of people that Boris Johnson and co. look to for some of their policy ideas. And that is why Mirza Mirza, or whatever her name, resigned when Boris Johnson had the temerity to call out a nonce.
Yeah.
This is why. Gristle donated. Thank you for the £20 via the Ko-fi. Loving the Spike stream. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Shall I just read a last quick bit of the sort of conclusions you've got here before we head out?
No. We have. Don't worry. We have our conclusions. We're going to kind of go through. Well, What does all of this mean? What does all this mean to us?
Well, I'll read the first bit you've got here. Leftists often see this affair as evidence of entryism into the socialist movement, which is partially correct. But they're not willing to admit that the regime runs both sides. And their supposed enemies are also fake. The RCP is what happens when old-fashioned Marxism tries to survive in pure managerialism and have a voice. This is also a story of the impotence of the left to properly frame these people as what they are.
Okay, my conclusions were that anti-woke communism is indistinguishable from modern Toryism. The anti-woke communism of the RCP, of the Revolutionary Communist Party, eventually just tends towards the raw managerialism of Toryism. And the Revolutionary Communist Party is a perfect example of an organised minority. This, and the Fabian Society, and the stuff, but I might give a quick kind of postscript to at the end, just to give people some stuff to research. This is how you organise without a political party, without a mass movement, without a mass voice. The Revolutionary Communist Party were political nobodies and weirdos from the 1970s and 80s who effectively died in the 1990s, and yet they have a massive voice within the UK right, a massive voice if you map out their entire network. Elite academics in modern Western states, even communist ones, are political pragmatists when it comes to power. And all of this shows us that no matter which way around these people move, whether they're leftists in conservative clothing or conservatives who formerly had leftist clothing, ideology is post hoc to being an organized minority and gaining power. That is what all of this demonstrates. What they want is more dead children, more raped children, and more funding from Pfizer. Yep. That is the agenda of Spiked Online. That is the agenda of the Ferretti's, of Brandon O'Neill. All of this disgusting cabal of well-rewarded political insiders who've had the coup of now having a baroness amongst them. This is the kind of some of the stuff you can see when you peek in, and the rottenness of the British establishment. They're just all like this.
Yep.
And the reason we're able to zoom in on so many bits of it and show us the containment is they are just all like this. It's just awful everywhere. And I guess a quick postscript here, really. Radlib, to his credit, reminded me that Irving Kristol, even though he's slightly further removed, which is Billy Crystal's father,
yes,
he's referred to here as a Jewish realist in National Affairs, but he started out life throughout his 20s as a Trotskyite socialist, and his ideas come from people like Clement Greenberg, who was, again, a formalist aesthetician, but really what he was one of the early thinkers in the neoconservative movement. Again, you may be sensing a pattern here. Mm. There's also Lionel Trilling, who was another very, very influential member of the early neoconservatives. And all of these people, especially the early ones, especially Greenberg and Trilling, who is also what you might think. I'll just.
I mean, it says it in both of them. His family was Jewish. Parents were middle class Jews.
Frankly, Jewish neocon nexus is Marxist in origin, and so also is the Fabian Society. I mean, this is just from Encyclopedia Dramatica. Sorry, this is not from ED. This is from Encyclopedia Britannica.
It's a very different text.
Yeah.
The Fabians at first attempted to permeate the liberal and conservative parties with socialist ideas. They later helped to organise the separate Labour Representation Committee, which became the Labour Party in 1906. The Fabian Society has since been affiliated with the Labour Party. The national membership of the Fabian Society has never been very great. At its peak in 1946, it had only about 8,400 members, but the importance of the society has always been much greater than its size might suggest. Generally, a large number of Labour members of Parliament and the House of Commons, as well as many of the party leaders, are Fabians. And in addition to the National Society, there are scores of local Fabian societies. And let's not forget the archetype, the perfect archetype for this, John Maynard Keynes.
Yes.
Now, the only thing that he didn't have going for him, as far as I'm aware, is that he wasn't Jewish. But he was a communist at one point. and he was also a paedophile. And he also went from being hard left into being soft left into being a hero of the right.
Yes. I'm not quite sure why the screen isn't changing over, though, because I've got the lower third of it.
It's because the image is overlaid on top of it?
No, no, it's not. I've got these in the wrong window here, sorry. Oh, here we go. Sorry, I had the wrong window. Well, they chose the wrong window there, but here's the Fabian Society section. But this little section here, sorry, the part of the national membership, slight boomer moment there, although I did leave Baz on screen, which is fine. This really is just an exaltation of the organized minority. This, the Fabian Society, the Revolutionary Communist Party, and the early neoconservatives are burning examples of the power of the organized minority. They don't have party, they don't have mass, and they don't have recognition. But what they have is power. And you don't need any of those three things to have power. You don't need mass, you don't need even a proper party structure, and you certainly don't need public recognition.
No.
Again, very good worked example with all of this. But I think we've earned our title there. I mean, they are revolutionary communist Tories. They interact with the Tory party. They're in the Tory party. They're Tory peers. And they're also just advocates for paedophile rights.
Yep.
And that really is the end point of kind of the soft British libertarian rabbit hole. That is where it ends, in this nexus of really grubby people with really, really, really grubby ideas. Once again, if you do want to get our written content, you can go over to the Anti-Politics Substack. I will show that quickly again here at the end. Do go and subscribe to Anti-Politics if you want to help us out as well. It's one of the main places you can help us out financially too. I think I've made sure we've had all the super chats read out. Yeah, we have. So apart from that, I will say, do interact with the videos, as we said earlier, you know, all the YouTube-y stuff. It does help. We have to play the game a bit. Thank you for coming. Thank you for staying with us,
yes.
Everybody. Thank you to the 260 people watching.
Yes, it seems we have picked up a larger audience for this stuff, especially over the last sort of month or so. So we're glad that this stuff's growing, that there seems to be a growing focused interest on what we're doing. And to all the sort of newer folk, if you have something that you either find is interesting about this stuff, or something else you want to add, or maybe you have that little tidbit of information that makes something extra juicy, please come and contact us and give it to us or reply about it somewhere, because we will read it. We are interested. And fundamentally, I think a large part of what we really have done over the last couple of months wouldn't have been possible without such a receptive audience who's willing to essentially learn with us as we go.
Yes, but I shall quickly put us a little bit of outro music on. Thank you guys for watching. Have a very, very good evening, and we will see you later.
See you next week.
Yes, see you next week. Go to the pub, have a good evening. Thanks to all our members, all that good stuff. Good night.
Brum, brum, brum.